Okay. Thanks everyone for joining us. This is our second session of kind of introducing and continuing the IsoBank ingest and now interface testing process. Several of you have already provided us with some sample data and everything thus far that we have tried to ingest that you've provided, we've been able to do so, sometimes with some tweaks needed and sometimes learning something in the process. So thank you, especially to everybody who has sent us stuff already. It's been extremely helpful. I'm going to introduce today by talking just a little bit more about some of what we've learned and some of what has changed as a result of the initial feedback that we've gotten from you all in the process of learning how to ingest data that comes from the real world. And then I'm going to pass over to David Walling, who's gonna kind of walk you through the template generation and the ingest process as it is today. And that's going to act as kind of an introduction to the process that we hope that you will all be able to use and test yourselves in the coming weeks. And before I go into updates, I want to just take a moment to acknowledge the fantastic work that David and Tomislav and Anna have all done on putting together the technical foundation for the metadata model and for actually inputting all of the metadata into the system. As many of you know, we have an extraordinarily rich and robust metadata model with literally hundreds of elements. And we've come up with a system that will allow us to support a fairly flexible model with changing metadata fields and changing controlled vocabularies over time without having to do significant re-engineering. But one of the consequences of that is that Anna has had to manually create all of these metadata fields and the controlled vocabularies in the interface. And she's done a ton of work on that, as Tomislav and David have done on the technical foundation. So I'm really grateful to have had them to do all of that, because I certainly wasn't smart enough to come up with it myself. Okay, so a couple of things that we learned in the process of kind of ingesting the data that we've gotten from you already. One of the first and kind of most important things, we had initially been using a combination of the user identity and the sample ID that the user provided as a way to uniquely identify both samples and measurements. We also had a lab sample ID that was meant to be, you know, for a laboratory provided identity on the sample, but it kind of quickly became clear that we also had these cases where we have multiple different analyses happening on the same sample. And so we need to be able to uniquely identify both a sample provided by a user and the multiple measurements that are associated with that sample. So as a result of that, we already had an analysis identifier in the QAQC metadata, but we elevated that up to be core metadata, and it's now a required field. So, you know, many folks, I think, will not have an analysis ID that's provided by the lab, either because the lab didn't provide it or because the data you're submitting you don't have access to that level of metadata, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be a really precise value. It just has to be something that is unique to that sample so that we can, if necessary, differentiate different kinds of analyses that produce different kinds of measurements, but coming from the same sample that you provided to the lab. So that's it shouldn't be a very consequential change in terms of filling out and providing the data to us, but it's something that you need to be aware of, since, you know, it may differ from your expectations of what the required fields are, based on kind of previous discussions in the workshops. The other kind of just minor thing, we have a number of fields, and the place where this came up most frequently was the reference materials for the lab and analysis metadata, where the field can have multiple values in it. And rather than asking you to do something within a comma-separated spreadsheet to somehow differentiate multiple values within a comma-separated spreadsheet, what we're asking folks to do is just duplicate the column in that case and provide us multiple columns with the primary reference material or whatever field that may be. And we can handle that appropriately as long as we know that the metadata is something that we can have multiple values for. That's something that the system supports. We have talked a little bit about maybe providing more differentiation there. So allowing for a primary reference material one, primary reference material two, and so forth, because some systems, we've heard that some of the data wrangling systems don't like having multiple columns with the same header on them. So that's kind of still an open topic of discussion. But for now, that's the guidance, and that's the way that the system works with the data. And that will hold true for fields that you generate through the template generator. And then finally, something else I wanted to just highlight from the work we've done so far is we do have in the system for each of the metadata fields, we also have descriptive information. We have descriptive information both for the metadata field itself and in the case where there's a controlled vocabulary for each of the vocabulary terms within the list that we provide. And as long as we have those descriptions, we have a nice and if it's available, I think David will show you this, we have a nice kind of field guide to the metadata that will explain to you what the valid values are, what the metadata field is meant to be, and then details about all of the individual controlled vocabulary elements when we have them. The only consequence of that is right now, we have at best very minimal descriptions for all of those. That may come from the, you know, from previous discussions in the workshops, but in a lot of cases, we don't have the necessary expertise to provide appropriate descriptions. So kind of just a heads up for everybody that we will be asking for the community's help in providing useful descriptions for all of these various metadata fields. And I'll just say now, if you see something as you're working with the system and you have or know quickly how to write a couple of sentences that describe it, do so and send it to us. We can put it in pretty quickly. If not, then we will be organizing kind of a more systematic mechanism to get all of those metadata descriptions populated, because it is a very nice feature of the system, and I think it will be very helpful over the long term in helping you as data depositors to understand what exactly is meant by each of these metadata descriptions, what kind of data goes in each one of these fields. Because this is, as I mentioned before, the metadata model is very complex. There's lots of terms, and it's not possible just from the descriptions of all of the fields to have perfect clarity as to exactly what we mean by every single metadata field and how that matches up with your data. That's kind of another lesson I'd say we've taken from the early deposit ingest process. Okay, so I'll just pause there. If there are any questions about any of that, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, we can move on to David and the demo.
I did have a quick question that I mentioned in my email earlier. Today, I'm sorry I came in late. This is Marielle. Can is did you mention in earlier discussions, for example, where we would want to put scientific names, or is that part of the description that you're just talking about, taxonomy?
So the version of the template that you were looking at was the earlier version that definitely did not have taxon names. There is a space for that in the fuller metadata model, and I think you will probably see that if not today, then very soon. One thing I will mention about that is that for now that's going to be a free text field. We do intend to do validation against that in the long term, but so far we have good suggestions, but I wouldn't say we have kind of solid consensus as to how exactly we want to do validation of the taxonomic names in that field. So we're going to kind of punt on it for the time being and trust that you all mostly know what you're doing as far as inputting taxonomic names, and it won't be too far off.
And then one other question in terms of locality. You spoke about having some metadata guidelines for how to input data for these various fields, and it would be interesting to know, like, what level of locality are you? I'm assuming that we would want to include higher geography. Some of the localities on a paper that I was putting data in for just said something like mainland, but I know that this is United States, Alaska, in a particular quad, and so I just wondered if there were plans to try to do standardized locality information, or if that would also be free text.
For the time being, we're asking more for coordinates than localities. The only thing, without getting into the longer discussion, the only thing I'll say about localities is that I would like to support it, but I think you have a similar issue there about where does your validation come from? What is your source? We can rely on sources like Arctos for a lot of this stuff, but especially if we have multiple potential locality sources, then things get complicated. So it's definitely something I'd like to support, but it's a more complicated topic. So for the time being, I think we're more focused on just getting, GPS coordinates when we can.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right. So, David, I think you should have the ability to share your screen. Let me know if you need me to change anything.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. So here we're still working and pushing all of our latest changes to a quality assurance or test website. And this is kind of where we want people to initially actually come in and use the site. This is something we'll keep around throughout the life of the project. So as we push out new features, we can first have a kind of a friendly user group test those out before we push them all the way up to production. So the URL is just isobank-qa for qualityassurance.tacc.utexas.edu. And we're very close to just having you guys come in and register for accounts and just to turn you loose on this website. There's a couple of things we want to do behind the scenes to finish up that is we want to make sure our backups are all set up to automatically take snapshots, even in the QA version, so that if you do provide test data, we don't lose it. So we need a couple more days to get all that set up, but I did want to first go ahead and walk through very briefly how to register for an account in ISOBank. So most of these pages will be open to the general public. So these first three tabs, for instance, are CMS generated public facing pages. Our dataset statistics page, which we recently added, can also be something that's just available to the general public. But there's going to be certain features like My Data that are actually going to require you to first log in, which of course means you first need to have an account. So if you click register or create account, you'll get a simple form like you see on pretty much any website. And I can just fill this out real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Once you hit register, it should send you through an email, your standard email confirmation step. Let me open back up my Gmail account. Once you get that email, you should have one additional link to activate your account. Account activated, and you can now log in. So I'm actually going to get rid of some of these. So now if I try to access, say, my data, it'll force me to log in. For now, I'm going to use this test account. I will say this in QA, as you register for your account and start submitting data, the idea is, at least for this initial phase, is we're going to try to move all of that data and user account information up to production as well. Eventually, we'll be at a point where anything tested in QA will not be expected to stay around. Only the features and code will get pushed to Q to the production site once we get to that point. We'll go ahead and log in here. So here is the main view for working with your data in the QA site for ISOBank. Here are three of the sample data sets that we've received back so far. And here is where you basically can just manage all of these submitted data sets, which is the term that we use in the actual code to refer to basically a CSV file. If I want to actually list all of the records associated with that CSV file, we have a separate page for doing that. This is highly editable. We can figure out exactly how much of the information to show on this page, but it's just a quick guide to let you see, you know, what records are actually associated with the CSV. I can actually sort on all of this information. And then for an individual record, and by record, we really mean a line in a CSV file. You can click on the details page for it. And this is kind of the more extensive information about that particular line in a submitted CSV file. So in this case, this particular line only had a single measurement type of D2H with this particular value and an unknown for the unit, but it did provide the scale information. These are the measurement specific metadata fields. The rest of the additional metadata is all of the metadata that is shared by all the measurement types for a given line in a CSV file. And for each of those, we are grouping them into certain categories just to make the management of them easier, since we do have so much information. And for any given record, there may be maybe a single value, maybe 50 values, and this page will be dynamically created based on the actual metadata values that are present for this particular record. You can also at any time download the actual CSV version of the file that was submitted. And this gets back to how we expect updates to these files to work. As I mentioned at the last time, we want Excel or whatever your favorite CSV editor is to be that primary editing interface because it already does this very well. It's scriptable. I think we already have one user who's actually using R to spit out and manage kind of all these CSV files. So we want y'all to keep using the tools that you're already comfortable using. We don't want to try to recreate all of this type of basic functionality within the application itself. So you could come in here, update this this information, fix some values, add to it, whatever, and then you would simply resubmit that. Now, right now, we don't have an update button. So for now, we could simply delete the file and then just resubmit it. We are requiring there to be a unique title for each one of these files you submit, as well as providing some sort of description just to help you and others who come in looking for data kind of understand what this is. Choose our file. Forgot which one I actually deleted. Hold on, let me double check. So go back to my data. So it was the WOMAC file. So let me recreate that one. And once I submit, you'll see the button's grayed out so I can't hit it again. it's going to, you know, depending on the size of the file and the number of metadata fields, it may take anywhere from 5 to 30-ish seconds to actually load all that data. For each line, it's, you know, it's verifying all of these information about the metadata fields, whether it's required only if another field is present on that particular line, so on and so forth. But at the end of that, if it successfully was able to create every single line in that CSV file, it'll take you to this summary page, which tells you how many records were actually created. And then for each of those, it'll actually give you a list of warnings. So these were things that did not cause the file to be rejected, but it's something that we want you to be aware of. So for instance, each row in this particular CSV has a column called external sample ID, which is not matching up to a known column name for a supported metadata field. So this is a feature we wanted to have. This means that you can actually include additional columns in your CSV that we don't yet support. And at some point in the future, we may add a metadata field that matches that column name essentially, and you could simply, you know, resubmit that, or eventually we'll have an update field. So you can hit update, pass it along the updated CSV file, and instead of just deleting all the records, we'll actually update them on the fly. This will become more important as we actually build additional functionality on top of these submitted data sets. So for instance, maybe as we start sharing these between users and projects, you may want to keep a list of your favorite data sets. So in that those cases, we're not going to want to just completely delete the data set and recreate it, because we're going to have foreign key references within this kind of favorites concept that we want to keep in the database. So the actual technical details behind that is actually not that difficult. It's just we have something we haven't focused on quite at this point. We can see that, so in QA right now, these are the only three data sets we currently have loaded. But if we look at our data set statistics page, we see that even with these three, we have 267 unique analysis records, almost 4,000 unique analysis metadata records associated with those, 658 measurement records, and for those 658 measurement records, 790 measurement metadata records. Not every measurement type has metadata associated with it. So things like percent carbon are just a value. There are no real metadata records, at least at this time, directly associated with that measurement type. But we expect to fully flesh this page out with some other interesting things, and we are open to suggestions about what should be here. You can imagine a table that shows counts by measurement type, counts by analysis type, material type, so on and so forth. So this is, again, kind of a page that we can use to market ISOBank eventually to the wider community, and that can be accessible to people who haven't even logged into the system. Any questions about this kind of, so I did want to show, so what happens if you try to submit a data set that has an error? So if I select one, let's say this one, which I have some known errors in, and I try to submit that, the feedback mechanism is it will, if there's any line in that CSV that has an error, it's going to reject the entire file, but also give you a row by row information about what was wrong with that CSV. So in this one, we saw that in row one, lab sample ID was not provided, but that's a required field. Also in row one, we had this D13C measurement scale field that had a value of bit bad. So it did not match a lookup value. So measurement scale is a lookup value metadata field type. So the value in that, if there is a value, it would try to look that up in the database. If it can't find it, it'll reject it, so on and so forth. So the feedback mechanism is you'll bring your data in. It's going to be based on one of these upload templates, which we'll dive into next. And you'll fill that out. You'll come here, try to submit it. If there's errors, we want this to provide enough information to the user that they'll be able to go back and fix those errors in the CSV file and resubmit that. Any questions on that before I jump into actually how do we create an upload template to start filling that out? Okay. So we showed this off at our last meeting, but we've done a little bit of work to on just kind of hardening it and a few minor enhancements as well. The first thing we'll see here is that we have added this reset form button. So as you're going through and clicking these, there are so many of them that you may get to a point where you're like, okay, well, I just kind of need to start over. So by hitting reset form, it's basically going to pre-select all the required and recommended metadata fields as they're currently specified in the system. This is also the same mechanism that we expect to use to provide community-specific metadata templates. So imagine another button that says water or paleo. We could have that community decide what are the most important or what are the metadata fields that they really want to be in all data sets that are uploaded and associated with that particular community. And so we could have those fields to click on a button, have all of those particular fields pre-selected, and then at the bottom, allow them to download that template, fill it out, and submit it to us. I think since last time, we've also added this measurement types area. So you have to select at least one of these measurement types in order to download the template. If you try to come down here without doing that, you'll see that the selected measurement types is empty, and this button is basically turned off with a message to please select a measurement type. So if I come back up, select the Commons carbon nitrogen fields, they now show up in the selected measurement types and this button is activated. We do have, within the system, relationships between certain fields. I'm trying to remember exactly which ones we've been testing on. I think it was clicked.
Dave, I like to use soil in material type and then soil horizon as a dependent field. I hope so that's set up in QA. I know it is in my database, but I...
Soil.
The inorganic version of soil. If you scroll down a little bit more. There we go, that one.
I thought I might be able to search within that, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, looks like it's not set up in QA.
Okay. Well, so this is a lot of JavaScript-y stuff that we're still kind of working through some of the bugs, but I know things like I'm blanking now on which ones will trigger the there's a lot more actually in QA than there was even in dev here. Anyway, the point is that some of these, by clicking one, if there's a relationship that exists, it will automatically select one that's dependent on that. So if I select one of these fields and another one is required, if that field is selected, it should automatically implement that logic. That can be true with both just the metadata field, but also certain valid values within a metadata field could trigger a relationship that says that an additional field should be provided if this metadata field has a certain value. So that's a lot of what we've been focused on over the last couple of weeks. But nevertheless, once you've selected your fields, you should be able to hit the download button, spit out your CSV, open it in your favorite CSV editor. And here we see all the fields. The main thing I wanted to point out about this, and that I don't think that we've really talked about previously, is that there is a certain order to how we're putting these fields into these CSV files. Basically, it's going to be the core metadata fields for each group of analysis metadata. We'll provide those columns. And then at the end, for each measurement type, we will provide a column for that measurement type. And if that measurement type has metadata associated with it, those will always follow directly after the measurement type. So this is done for two reasons. The first is we want to keep these templates and the CSV files that users will download from ISOBank as consistent as possible. So it just kind of helps you if you're looking for a particular value, you kind of start to understand where it would be within these CSV files. This ordering also provides a way to simplify the ingest logic slightly, because there is an implicit relationship between, well, it's technical, but if I have like all the core measurement, all the core analysis data, I can actually create that analysis object and then start tacking on all the analysis metadata to it. So for those two reasons, we are, at least at this time, making the order of these columns have actual meaning.
I have a question regarding that. So if you wanted to add a new field or column, you would need to go back and download a new template, and rather than just inserting a column with the appropriate header somewhere in your file.
Actually, you could do both, actually. It would be okay. So if it was a new analysis level metadata, you could just tack it on. It probably wouldn't break the ingest, but again, we do want to try to keep them as consistent as possible. So you could do it both ways. These don't have to come from the download tool or the generator tool. You could create yours, fill it out, and then hand it to a partner as like an example of doing one and have them fill out their own version of that just based on the CSV file. We do anticipate that these things could just be passed around as blank templates or blank, you know, header only CSV files.
But the order would need to be the same as it would be if it were you downloaded the headers. You couldn't just append or add in a column in some random place within the file.
That's a good point. It may break it. There's each individual one doesn't have to be in the exact same order. It's more the groups of them, right? It's more like these first four need to be in some order at the start. All the analysis metadata needs to come in the middle, followed by the measurement stuff at the end. You could, if it's an analysis measurement field, it could go anywhere within this middle group. But that's actually a good point that I'll have to kind of think about the implications of how that might complicate the ingest.
I think the point there would just be, you know, if you know roughly where it goes and exactly what it's called, it's probably okay to just add it to the spreadsheet, but there's not going to be any guarantee if you are just kind of randomly sticking new fields into the middle of the spreadsheet that it will work the way you expect it to.
Yeah. To follow up on that, Chris. Oh, sorry, this is Phil. I was just going to ask if we could shuffle things around, right? So I think, like, at least our reports at UNM, when we always give them to people, I'm thinking about an outside user, it'll say, you know, D13C percent C, D15N percent N, and then our carbon and nitrogen ratio. And if somebody wants to just copy and paste that chunk of their report and put it in, could they reshuffle these headers to make them the order of the spreadsheet that they already?
No, that's what David is saying. This order is important. There can be variations within the groups, but if you significantly change the order, you're definitely going to a point where it's no longer necessarily guaranteed to work.
Yeah, and we could technically make it work in any column order. We could handle all the reordering on the fly, but I keep advocating to the TAC folks that I think trying to keep these things as consistent as possible is going to be a good thing long term.
I think that having them consistent as possible on the template download is really helpful to users. However, I see a problem with multiple users or even one user trying to edit a file, because most people are used to being able to shuffle their column headers around, that doesn't really matter. And if you want to add information later and having to constantly go back and follow some, we would need really clear, some clear interface instructions as to what the appropriate order should be to avoid problems down the line when people are actually working with the spreadsheets.
I agree with Mario. I think that's pretty common that people are going to want to move these things around, and at least putting it on the page, you know, when you're creating your template, that it needs to keep in that order so people know, because I think that a logical thing people might do is reshuffle these headers to match the spreadsheets that they already have, because it's easier to do that than a data, you know, spreadsheet that's already full of data.
Yeah, because I mean, just doing the test file from the last time around, I realized, oh, well, I could add a publication DOI into this. And, oh, okay, I'm just going to grab these two columns. I'm going to insert some new information. And I just input it wherever it felt like it made sense. But I would want to have the flexibility. I think most people working with spreadsheets are used to that kind of flexibility. And I think if we didn't have it, there would need to be very, very explicit instructions, and it might create some user difficulties.
Okay, well, I would propose this. Let's make the ingest column order agnostic. I would, however, when you hit this download button, I would have it actually store the CSV file in a particular order. So it can ingest it in any order, but when it's actually saved and served back up, it should be in a more consistent order. Does that make sense?
That would be great. Yeah, that's fine.
That would be great. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think that that's technically not too challenging. So I will explore that. Right. So we showed this last time as well. I think that we have this. So in addition to this kind of form where you're actually selecting which field you actually want, we also have a more in-depth field guide, which should open up a new tab. Here it's going to show you your core analysis information. And for each of the metadata fields, or core analysis information, we provide the column name, whether it's required, a little text about, you know, what is this. So for lab, for example, it's the abbreviation for a lab where the analysis was run. And unique to lab is that a matching lab record must already exist in IsoBank. We want lab to be like a first class entity within IsoBank. And so as we're starting to test and we're getting more labs in, that lab likely may not already exist in IsoBank. So we want to talk about how to, we don't want any lab just to be entered by anybody, right? We want some kind of control over that. And we're still kind of debating how we should handle that. So for now, you can just send an email to the IsoBank @TAC email list. If you get an error saying this lab doesn't exist, just send us the information about the lab. If it has an abbreviation that it's commonly known by, give us that, and we'll go enter it in through the admin form and have that available for your ingest. Back to field guide. Lab sample ID, again, it's required. Some of these fields are gonna have regex or other validators on them. So lab sample ID, it's free text, but we want you to keep it between 5 and 50 characters, and then only alphanumeric values with no spaces. So we also provide some examples of what that looks like. Same for user sample ID, same type of requirements on the field, on what's a valid value for that field, what that field actually represents. And this is the sample, this sample measurement ID is the field that Chris pointed out at the beginning of the meeting that is our kind of new unique ID that essentially matches and uniquely identifies a line in a CSV file across actually all of IsoBank right now, not just a given data set. So it's 5-char min, 50-char max, alphanumeric, no spaces. And it again, this key must be unique for every record submitted to IsoBank. And you, as the user, can kind of come up with your own kind of unique formula for that. So for instance, for this one, we could just easily, and this is easy to do in Excel or anything else, just tack on a 1, a 2, whatever, if there's duplicate records, say in your user sample ID, to easily create this unique sample measurement ID. Once we get to the point of updating records, as opposed to deleting and recreating, we'll be keying off of this particular field to make those updates. And that's a pretty important point. So any questions about that or confusion about what that represents? Okay.
I have a quick question, David. Is it some of these IDs are going to differ from, for example, lab sample ID? You said it's alphanumeric, no spaces. The data set I was provided actually did have spaces. And so you'll be changing the original sample ID as it was run in the lab. But of course, ideally in the future, people will have some understanding of the standardization here. The same thing with sample measurement ID. Is there a possibility that you would auto-generate some of these values rather than requiring the user to do so to make it standardized? Yeah,
we've gone back and forth on this. We talked about just using the primary key in the analysis table for this. But I guess we haven't come to a complete consensus. This has been working for us in the past few weeks, and I guess we still consider it open for debate, Chris, how we want to handle this.
Yeah, I mean, the fundamental issue, you know, I thought about uniquely about, you know, just auto-generating these in cases where they're not supplied. But the issue is that this is an important field that is used to uniquely identify things. So we don't, at the point of ingest, we don't have enough information to say that auto-generating it is the correct thing to do.
That's a good point, actually.
So you could provide us two measurements, right, for the same sample and just omit a measurement ID in one and then not omit it in the next one. And we could do the wrong thing, basically, in parsing through the file. So for the time being, we're making this a required field. And you'll see what David has provided here is an example where you're basically just copying. You're just copying a user sample ID into the sample measurement ID, and that's just to tell the system, yes, this is a unique measurement that is associated with this particular sample. You know, we can talk in the future about if this is a case that we see a lot, maybe there's a way to tell the ingest system, no, absolutely, I know what I'm doing. I want you to generate these for me, but that's about the best we could do. We're never going to have the information to be confident that it's okay for us to generate those for you, unless you explicitly tell us that that's the case.
So just looking at your NEON numbers right there, for example, having worked with NEON and having just looked at a different researcher samples, NEON's pretty good about their formatting, and it's pretty consistent in their way they do things, but independent researchers are not. The file I was just working with had sometimes there was a dash or space between a number and a letter, and sometimes there wasn't, and I could see problems with user error causing a lot of conflicting values. We have the same issue in museum collections with coming up with globally unique identifiers, and I can see that kind of being an issue here. There will be error. People submitting data will give you very multiple versions of the same thing. I don't know how much of it you can control, but having one standard key that was assigned uniquely within IsoBank that was outside of the control of users to create their own error might not be a bad idea, at least for the critical fields. So.
Yeah, and we will, to be clear, we will have that you see on this the far left-hand side, this ID. That is a unique to IsoBank ID that we generate that uniquely identifies the values within IsoBank. So we do have that. We just need these additional fields so that people can, for example, give us multiple measurements that relate to the same sample and identify that that's what they are.
What about later correction or to any of these, the same problem is the GenBank has the same problem. If a submitter puts in, for example, the wrong voucher catalog number, or it's in the wrong format, or it's just blatantly wrong, then and it's associating then that sample with the wrong museum voucher specimen as a result, then it's only the submitter can make those corrections. Usually you don't have the ability for museums to make corrections later, but there are needs. There have been issues where we do need to make corrections to associate a value with the right sample. So I've just kind of, from my perspective, working with GenBank and with museums both, just heads up that there will be problems down the line, and the more you know, if you have a unique key on something, it just helps resolve those issues.
Yep.
Okay. So the second section is the core measurement information. Right now, that really means measurement type, and then everything else is mostly the analysis and measurement sub metadata fields grouped into their categories. For each of these, if you look at, if you click the help button, it'll pull up an additional page with a little easier to read formatting. And this is where we can provide this more detailed description that could be quite, you know, verbose if it needed to be for a tricky a field. And additionally, for the valid values, could also have their own descriptions for each of those valid values, as I think Chris or Tomislav mentioned earlier. Again, this is where we would be looking to the community to provide us or actually enter and help us manage this type of metadata information about the metadata. I believe, so as we turn you loose, you more than likely, both with the upload templates or actually trying to submit filled out templates, run into errors. And so for now, we're just going to ask you to provide again to the list, the isobank@tag.utexas.edu. Just shoot us an email with as much information about that error as you can so we can go track down exactly what's going on. And just we'll use that as our primary feedback mechanism right now. Eventually, maybe we'll have some more kind of formal log, a bug report type functionality. But as our community is still relatively small, we'll just keep a little more informal and flexible in that regard. And Thomas, Albert, Chris, is there anything that I've missed that we wanted to cover for this particular?
Well, just on that point, if you are reporting something that you think is a bug, that is, you're getting an error on ingest and you believe, you know, this shouldn't be giving me an error, then yes, please do report it to us, but ideally send us your CSV file as well.
Yes.
So that we can replicate the bug and verify that it's fixed if it is. And I definitely do encourage you to do that. Try this stuff out. It will break. Don't worry about that. It will definitely break, but that's fine. That's why we're doing this. Just let us know how you think it's breaking incorrectly, and give us the CSVs so that we can validate the behavior when it's fixed.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on any of that? As David said, we have a couple of other things to do, just basically on hardening the server. So we'll send you a follow-up message within the next few days to let you know it's good to go. I won't necessarily discourage you from playing around with it as it is. But just be aware that things may be changing quickly and coming up and down over the next couple of days. But certainly, you know, feel free to play around with things. Look at the field guide. Again, I'll reiterate, if you see a description there that, you know, we put in a minimal description and you think I have a much better description of this field, type it up and send it to us. We're happy to take all of the feedback we can get on that. For the time being. And if there's nothing else, then we can let you all go. I did record the session, so I will send out links to all of that for those of us who couldn't make it today. All right, thanks everyone.
Thank you guys.